Hello, this is Mike Hargath with this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor for IT services firms. And we are here today with my partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart, to talk about profitability and how it impacts M&A. Ryan and Matt, welcome.
Well, a super timely topic for sure. as we're kind of wrapping up the third quarter, firms ought to be certainly thinking about where they're standing in terms of end of year profit and how that could enable an opportunity for a merger and acquisition.
Yeah, and this is a topic that is if we look at topics we've talked about before, this is one that we get asked about a lot. And when we look at a growth strategy consulting, we often talk about governing principles of a firm. And one of the most important is if you're running an IT services business, it has to have profit. And the biggest thing there is profit is really the right to continued employment. I have to have enough money on the table to continue to pay bills, to continue to drive the company forward, and it's vital just for the growth and success of the company. We have often seen product-led growth or companies that kind of feel they're in a product mentality in which growth at any cost is an option. And we find that in our market that can be really debilitating. So today, I just want to kind of talk a bit about profit in the light of mergers and acquisition and how it might impact timing, how it might impact your ability to sell, how it might be selling in. So, Mike, I know I just talked a little bit about why profit is important, but I'd love to if you have any more expounding on that and any kind of rules that we've seen for profitability in firms, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. I think what's important to understand if you're selling your firm and you look at your profit, you have to look at it through the lens of a buyer, right? A buyer is going to acquire your firm for a specific price, and they have to get to a return rate, a reasonable return rate on that investment, or they're not going to make it. And typically that return rate and timing of that return are really important. Most firms that do acquisitions say, hey, we need a 5, 6, or maybe outside a 7-year return on that investment, right? The profitability from our acquired business needs to be accretive, one, to our profit early, but also the whole investment that was paid should be paid back within that time horizon. That's really, really hard to do when you're a low profit business, or even a single profit EBITDA business. The goal would be to drive your business to top quartile profitability. That line crosses for most IT services companies at about 13 to 15% EBITDA. A little bit of a moving target, because as you measure top quartile, sometimes it goes as high as 17%. But your profit should be in that range, ideally, to be able to craft a reasonable return on investment for the buyer, and most importantly, drive a market price or multiple for your business that could meet your expectations of value. When you're low single-digit EBITDA, and certainly we have guys that run their business like that, they feel they don't want to quote-unquote pay taxes or whatever, and they try to drive and wring out all of the profitability of the business. We just can't get to a reasonable price point for the seller that will also align to a reasonable return on investment for the buyer.
That makes a lot of sense. The ROI and the kind of time frame and the internal rate of return are all heavy influencers on the valuation and how a company may be perceived. When we look at companies and looking to bring them to the market, I think it's important to remember that most deals are based on a multiple of profit. And just that simple statement is very important to understand and know.
I would also add, and I'll certainly, Matt, you can chime in on this, but, you know, most private-to-private transactions are reported, if they're reported in the press at all around valuation, are reported as a function of revenue. And it's easy to get lost in that. The reason it's reported as a percentage of revenue or a multiple of revenue is because that's the numbers that are known. And in private-to-private deals, people don't want to disclose the profitability of a company they just acquired, or the seller doesn't want to disclose how profitable they are, even though that is the index for how these deals are valued. And so it's sometimes, you know, we'll talk to potential sellers and say, well, my firm should be worth 2x revenue or 1.4 or 80% or whatever. But what they miss is that, you know, and typically those conversations are had with companies that have low profit, is that that isn't how they're valued. They're valued based on a multiple of profit. So it just so happens that aligns to what was paid, because that multiple of profit was such that, you know, was supported by the aligns to that revenue multiple because it was supported by generally a high profit business. And that multiple of profit just happens to correlate to what's reported around a multiple of revenue.
Yeah, well, let's kind of dig in there just a little bit, and I think there's an opportunity to you know, do some clarification. Yeah, there are deals that are traded on, you know, multiples of revenue, but those are very specialized, you know, situations. It could be that somebody has you know really, really unique intellectual property. They've got a product and or a product and a service that is very, very unique, and there's a ton of value because there's an opportunity to grab market share based upon the uniqueness of that offering. And so, you know, in those cases, it could be applicable to trade on the top line revenue. But again, very, very specialized in those scenarios. And I think that oftentimes an IT services firm could, you know, say, well, geez, you know, I heard about this, you know, XYZ company that traded on, you know, a multiple of revenue. It's just a misnomer because, you know, 90% of transactions that are in the IT services space aren't, quite honestly, aren't that specialized that can command being traded on a multiple of revenue. So that means that for 90% of the transactions that we see, they are traded on a multiple of EBITDA, right? And so it's just, I think it's just worth kind of being real clear and clarified on the aspect of how most opportunities are looked at in terms of value.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating topic, frankly, because everything that you just outlined is absolutely correct. And I think, you know, also for IT services companies that are in the low 20s% or mid 20s% EBITDA, from a profitability perspective, they can be in a kind of a multiple of revenue, certainly above 1x revenue. And, you know, in some cases as much as 2x revenue. But, you know, that's a really very, very special, profitable, high growth company, typically with a lot of secret sauce that's achieving that sort of benchmark. And you just keep that in mind. And, you know, certainly more profits better than less in the context of mergers and acquisitions. It gives you more choices as a seller, gives you more interest as a seller. Buyers love to buy highly profitable companies typically because they know that they're staffed appropriately in the IT services world, that they're managed effectively, that controls are in place, and that they're, if you couple that with kind of an up and to the right growth trajectory, you have a winner, right? And of course, buyers like to buy winners.
I think it's much harder to sell a company that doesn't have profits. When we've worked with buyers, there's some companies that will look at distressed assets or they'll look at fixer uppers, but for the most part, companies being accreted to earnings is a foundational item for acquisition. Just to note that. I want to switch gears a little bit. When we work with many companies on the buy side and we've looked for companies that are represented by other brokers, it's very common for us to see profit just happen to appear in the last year. And with a history of profits that have been less so, I'd love to get either of your perspective on the length of profitability that's needed or being aware or cautious of kind of false measures to boost up profitability. Any guidance or thoughts around that, Mike or Matt?
Well, I mean, there's got to be at least it sort of plays into a little bit the structure that could be applied to a deal, right? So if a firm has one, maybe 2 years of profit and or growing profit, well, they certainly better be able to demonstrate the foundation that enables that profit to continue, both the growth and the profit, as Mike pointed out. But if the less historical, means that if a firm wants to sell and get a number, they're going to have to demonstrate the continuity of that profit, and they're going to need to earn it out, right? They're going to need to put a higher degree of structure in an earnout for a buyer to be able to bank on the continuity of that profit. So, I think, Mike, I don't know, a minimum of 3-year track record of profit growth, should be in place. And, obviously, the more historical, the better, as it pertains to being able to maximize the sort of the cash portion of the deal.
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, the more thick ice you can show there as it relates to profitability trajectory and growth trajectory, I think it's important. We talk a lot about a rule of 45 that, talks to there's a trade-off for growth and profit. And if you have hyper-profitability but no growth, there's going to be, that's in question as well, right? There's got to be reasonable balance between the growth and profitability of the business so that a buyer can get comfortable that it's a healthy going concern that's growing. With that, then I think they'd be prepared. But, certainly a multi-year view of that is critical. Some folks had a pretty, material dip at COVID. We can explain some of that in that scenario. But you've got to look at a broader trend line. And, the farther we get away from the impacts of COVID, the less that's an impact and frankly, less than an opportunity for why you may have seen a hit in profitability or growth, but I certainly think at least 3 years is critical.
Yeah, that really helps give a time frame to it. Switching gears a little bit, we talk with sellers often that they have a number in their head and they understand that the profitability is not at an ideal number, and they're less inclined to consider selling the company until they can get that profitability up. I'd love to get your opinion on is that the right thing to do? Should a company entrench and work on profit? Or are there scenarios or options that you could perhaps grow it together and maybe sell in and look at ways to take an earnout and kind of prove the growth? Just to give some guidance, and granted, every scenario is going to be a bit different, but are there some scenarios that you've seen when someone's asking that question? Should they at least take the call of a broker and go through the discussion, or do you hold and wait?
Well, I think some of that depends on what the intent of the seller is, right? So if the intent of the seller is to, quote unquote, sell in, be part of the going concern plus transaction, then certainly, you know, they should take the call and they should discuss how, you know, they might be turning some wrenches on the business to optimize profitability and growth right now, and that they want to be able to take advantage of that before they're fully out or fully exited. Now, there's ways to do that, right? You can roll equity and sell that equity later. You become part of the new company. There's ways to, you know, structure what we call gain share earnout arrangements. And in gain share and earnout arrangements, you certainly can participate in that growth and that profitability that's forthcoming. And oftentimes, if you've made material investments that haven't just hit yet or haven't fully been realized, you know, that is the right strategy. It may be right because of, you know, kind of where the business is today for you to exit with taking some risk in the consideration on the transaction so you can take advantage of investments or changes you've made in the business moving forward. It's generally going to be required by buyers if they see that there's softness in your numbers. They're going to ask that, especially if you're forecasting kind of big growth, hockey stick, high profit numbers, that you take some risk and participate in that on a go forward basis. So, you know, we think it's the right strategy. Matter of fact, as an aside, sellers that take advantage of sort of earnouts, you know, meet or exceed those earnout targets, you know, 84, 85% of the time. So, you know, they are paid out at a pretty high rate. And, you know, so the risk of earnouts really is not as much as many people perceive them to be.
Right. I think there is a balance there. Absolutely.
You know, one thing you brought up, Mike, is firms that pretty clearly seem to have optimized profit. Now, obviously, any seller is going to, you know, oftentimes do the right thing with regards to expenditures that, you know, may not be paying off in the near term and the reduction of those expenditures. But in other cases, firms make some material changes to their, you know, operating model and reduce things that are really quite necessary to continue to grow the business. And they do so, you know, because they think that a buyer is going to go, wow, look at these, you know, these exploding profit margins and, you know, pay up, right? Yet the reality is that if the foundation has been changed and or compromised so that a firm isn't in a position to continue to grow and as a, you know, going concern, well, you know, the people are fooling themselves.
Totally agree, Matt. Totally agree. There's absolutely balance here. For me, I think we've hit a lot of the points. If you're a company that's a few years out, there are opportunities for you to improve profit in general. Mike, Matt, either one here, have you seen some successes, or what would you recommend for a firm that's maybe taking a year off and trying to a year before sale or maybe two to help focus on improving that profit?
Well, I would add that, you know, certainly getting some outside help is probably a good idea. Right. I'll put in a little plug here for, you know, our team as it relates to kind of strategy optimization, advisory work that we do. You know, we help lots and lots of tech services firms kind of optimize their strategy for revenue growth and, most importantly, profitability. And there's some dials that you can turn there that may not be immediately evident to you as an operator. And I think by getting some outside counsel on that and taking that advice, you know, whether that be from us or someone else in the space who specializes in IT services firms, would be good, you know, would be time well spent and an investment that would return, you know, many, many times the level of, you know, ROI, the return on investment is very high, because if you can optimize that profit, it turns into a, you know, direct correlation of the multiple of EBITDA on a sale. So, you know, that preparation and outside counsel is critical. And certainly, you know, your accounting firm typically can help depending on what they do, if they have an advisory function. But I think what's more important is that the investments made in profit optimization come not just from cutting costs, but come from expanding sort of your market share and your growth. And that combination of balancing revenue growth with profitability is what's critical. And if you're going to make investments to do that, that if they're done right, you'll get a great return on investment on that time and energy spent.
You know, something, and it's not simple. I shouldn't say, I was going to say something is simple, but something as fundamental as getting a valuation done. You know, if you're thinking that your time horizon is within a year or two, getting a current valuation and, you know, one, just to set the mark in terms of where you're at against the market. But two, to understand the process, and because the, you know, looking at, you know, our method of a balanced value calculation is looking at the historicals plus the future, and understanding all of those inputs could be, you know, super valuable for a future seller. And, you know, from that, then, you know, as Mike said, there's opportunities for guidance around, you know, optimization, both on the growth front as well as on the profit side.
That's very helpful. Mike, Matt, that's all the questions I have for you today. Turn it over to you to wrap it up.
Sounds good, Ryan. Thanks a lot. As we bring this particular podcast to close, we'll tie a ribbon on it, as they say, in the summer of 2022. Certainly look forward to all tuning in next week as we explore other kind of growth strategy and M&A topics that are relevant to the IT services market. Thanks, and make it a great week.